You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'll just grab the wheel and steer us all over the place here. But
we are friends with fantasy benefits.
That's no, right. I know that no. You want to talk about football, but
no, football and only football.
All right. Chuck, I guess we're just going to have to do this podcast just the two of us.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
But I'm sort of skirting around. I'm trying to get in ahead of it, and then I want to come in right behind it.
Phrasing.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis. I'm joined by Chuck Anderson and Evan Peterson. How are you guys doing tonight?
Phenomenal, sir. Phenomenal.
How are you doing, Evan?
It's a great day to be alive in the Midwest, or Falcons country, as it's known in my house. So I'm doing fantastic.
Well, I'm glad, but we're going to focus on a different sport today, Evan, if that's right. I know that you want to talk about football, but...
No, football and only football.
All right. Chuck, I guess we're just going to have to do this podcast, just the two of us.
Yeah. Everything we bring up about Major League Baseball will somehow come back to Julio Jones and Matt Ryan.
Somehow. Chuck, why don't you let us, our listeners, know where you can be reached before we get into the podcast?
Well, I am Chuck Anderson, and I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I do field a lot of questions via Twitter, and I enjoy answering them, so feel free to interact with me and I'll try and help you out the best I can. I'll give you a free opinion that's usually worth at least a half a nickel.
And Evan, where can listeners reach you on Twitter?
At EasyEv3, Super Bowl shenanigans and baseball alike. Let's go.
And I am B Brennis, FWFB. Guys, why don't we jump right in? One of the topics that has been discussed through our fans and on one of our group pages is basically, what are we looking at with David Price this year? Some people were considering that David Price lost a lot of value last year. What are your guys' thoughts on this exactly? Chuck?
Well, I am the person on the I'm frightened by David Price. I owned him last year, and I watched him in a number of early starts at home. And he really, really struggled with some big innings early in games. They allowed him to pitch through a number of these innings, a number of these outings, which at times made them even worse. He was significantly better for the most part in the second half. You know, his September ERA was 4.35. You know, his April ERA was 5.76. I think if you look at his overall body of work over the last 5 or 6 years, like you see that... Last year was by far his worst year. You get a number of people who want to give him an excuse for it being an adjustment year in Boston. But then when you say something about worrying about him pitching in the AL East, they'll say, oh, well, he's been in the AL East forever. So I don't know how you can really play it both ways. And that's what people are doing. I really like David Price. Like I like who he is. you know, how he's done, what he's done in the game. He's been a warrior when he was with Tampa, et cetera, and so forth. But I see a lot to get disturbed about. It's his worst whip in a long time, his worst ERA in a really long time. If you cut three or four wins off of what he did last year, right, he drops to me to being like a top 35 to 40-ish pitcher, and people are still drafting him like he's the David Price that won the Cy Young. And I don't see that.
Oh, what about you, Evan?
Well, I mean, it all kind of started as a conversation about David Price and Cole Hamels, and whether, I mean, you see Price as closer to a 30th overall pick or kind of more of the mid-60s. Fenway was not good to him, especially in terms of how he faced against right-handed batters who put 14 balls over the fence in Fenway. And the one thing Price does have going for him is the absolute control that should keep his whip numbers lower than what they actually were. But you're talking about how you can give him credit for pitching in the AL East, but, you know, not take away for Fenway. I mean, he never pitched a ton of games in Fenway. He only pitched about a dozen in his career before. And Fenway is one of those stadiums that is known for, you know, playing a certain way. So I think it's something that you definitely do have to monitor. And I think it's something that you should definitely knock him down a bit for.
Yeah, for me, I wasn't a big fan of him when he was signing with the Red Sox, and it had nothing to do with it being in the AL East, because he had already been there. He had done fine when he was with Toronto. He had done good when he was with Tampa. And I didn't think that the adjustment mattered, considering that he had been traded the previous 2 years already, and he didn't need any adjustment there. So I think it just had to basically... there was a couple of different factors. One, his walks per nine was the worst it had been in 4 years. His home run per nine was the worst that it's been in his career since his rookie season, and that's just barely. He had his worst BABIP in his entire career, and he had his worst home run to fly ball rate in his entire career. His home run to fly ball rate was almost double what it was the year before. Now, his ground ball rate had improved, but he had... lost a little bit on his left on base percentage. There's just a bunch of different factors that came into it, and I get that, you know, there's a lot more home runs that can be hit in Fenway, and it's still the AL East, and the other teams had brought in some more talent. The Yankees had some talent for a bit. The Blue Jays obviously had a good lineup, and there had been even more home run hitters that were brought into into the Orioles. For me, I feel like he's not going to be as worthwhile to take this year, because I just can't get behind him. Yeah, he still gets a lot of strikeouts, and he'll get wins by being on the Red Sox. For me, I think he's closer to that mid-60s area than the 30. Like right now, he has an average draft position of about 45, 44.7 to be exact. But there's players that I would rather that come after him that I think I would rather have. I don't know if you guys agree, but Carlos Carrasco and Steven Strasburg and potentially even Jacob deGrom are a couple of players that I would rather have over David Price going into this year. What are your guys' thoughts, Evan?
The name that I really like there is Carlos Carrasco, and the name I don't like there is Steven Strasburg, because his injury history scares the crap out of me, even though he's great on the mound. But I think I'm really interested to see what Chuck has to say about this tier here.
I actually would not. I am avoiding all of the names that you mentioned completely, if at all possible. I don't like where they're getting taken. I think they're all getting taken too early. I'm an injury phobe when it comes to pitchers. I like I like pitchers that have been relatively healthy recently. And so Carrasco, who's only thrown more than 140 innings once in his entire career, I have no interest in him. DeGrom was an overachiever. Now he's coming off an injury. I do really like Jacob DeGrom overall, but I think he's going too early for me. I don't like anybody in this tier that we're speaking of. And since we are talking about David Price, I do want to mention that the idea that he's pitched, you know, he's up over 1,700 innings, including the postseason, matters to me. You know, in 2014, they beat him up to a total of 248 and a third innings in the, between Tampa Bay and Detroit. I think he's been getting hammered on pretty hard as far as innings, considering how many of his teams and how many postseason runs he's been on when he was a rental player at the end of those seasons. So this is an avoid zone for pitching for me. If Price was going towards the back end where all these people are going, that would be different. Because I do think there is still some upside. I like Price better than those players that you mentioned, but I'm avoiding the tier entirely.
Evan, do you have anything else to add on David Price and his draft position?
Well, no, but I mean, if we're going to talk about that argument there, I mean, we brought up Cole Hamels, and I think it's interesting the names that you were talking about after in that tier. I like Hamels above about half the names on that list. I think he got tortured by Arlington. I think, especially by right-handed pitching at home, or right-handed hitting, excuse me, 367 BABIP, which kind of hurts. And there was another area when I was playing around with the split tool that he was definitely getting hurt at, and that was in finishing out full counts, where he had never had a walk percentage higher than his strikeout percentage, and last year it was an 8% difference the wrong way. So I think there's something to be said about the walk percentage for him last year that could come back down a few ticks and provide him with a little bit of value where he's going.
Yeah, I personally have been a Cole Hamels fan for a lot of years, and I still think that I could get behind taking him over David Price if they were right in the same range as one another. I just feel that because of Price's name, people are going to be taking him earlier than he probably should, and I don't like the value that I'm expected to see from him this year. So for me, I'm looking to avoid him.
I mean, to put it into, everyone might not be thinking about it, you know, they don't have the numbers in front of them, but think about a 3.99 ERA. It is not something that you want in your staff ace in this day and age. Okay. He had a 3.99 ERA, Price I'm speaking of course. He had 227 hits allowed in 230 innings pitched. It is, I mean, that is a tough way to pitch. When I look at his stats, what jumps out to me is he almost should walk more people. Like, his stuff is, to me, is too good as a generality for him to be giving up all those hits. A much higher hit rate than he'd had in any other season. You know, giving up almost a hit per inning that you pitch for a former Cy Young winner with the kind of stuff that he's had. I see there's a lot of red flags within this, within these stats when you look at David Price. There really is.
Yeah, I can get behind all of that. Guys, why don't we move into the next topic that we want to talk about? And it's going to be talking about, if we're looking in terms of average draft position for a couple of big-time positions, we're going to be looking at where the run starts and what to do if you miss it and if it's worth jumping into. We want to start with shortstop. And we were looking that basically any of the first six picks at shortstop in average draft position, that's Carlos Correa, Corey Seager, Jonathan Villar, Xander Bogaerts, Francisco Lindor, and Trevor Story. They are going between pick 17 on average and pick 32 on average. What are your guys' thoughts this tier? And obviously, in a 10-team standard, not everyone's going to get one of these players. So if you miss this run, what are you looking to do? Chuck?
Well, you know, I think when we're talking about a run in players that's this early, I'm still in a mode this early in a draft where I'm going to take who I think the best player is. And I'm only going to use position and such as a tiebreaker. And I like the overall depth at shortstop enough that I'm a person that at least in probably a third of my drafts, I'm probably not going to participate in this run. Unless I truly think the guy is the best player, I'm going to be fine waiting past it or what have you. And of the names that you said, Jonathan Villar is the one, and despite me being a Brewer fan and me being happy about how well he played his big coming out party last year, Jonathan Villar is the one that doesn't fit there to me. I just I need a little more. You know, you're talking about somebody who didn't really have a prospect pedigree. He wore down some at the end of the season, which is somewhat understandable considering how much he ran. I do think I don't hate the pick, but it's not a pick I'm making.
What about you, Evan?
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things that people are going to get worried about being squeezed out of a position. And I mean, depending on your league eligibility, you're going to have Manny Machado and Trey Turner, who will pick up shortstop eligibility throughout this year, that are also going to be added to this pool. And then after Trevor Story goes at the average pick of basically 32, looking at NFBC data, the next one is Eduardo Nunez at 118, which is disgusting and is a different conversation all by itself. So I think in situations like this, you're going to get caught at the end of the second round and you're going to say, okay, I'm probably going to get my shortstop here, or I'm going to have to develop my strategy later. And you either have to have a guy that you really like or a guy that you really don't like. And for me, I'm kind of out on Francisco Lindor at the draft price. I would rather kind of piece together at the end, as opposed to, you know, maybe he drops off a little bit in batting average. Maybe the power isn't quite at 15 home runs. Maybe he's 15-15 instead of closer to, you know, 20 or 25 steals. It's a nice area for talent, but I'm probably going to try and play around a little bit later at shortstop.
Yeah, for me, I guess it really depends on how the draft is falling. Because for me, I really don't want to have to take one of these early shortstops in a redraft, because it just feels like it's a bit of a reach. I do understand the talent that they have, but there's other players that are going to be around these average draft positions that I just feel give you better value than these guys. The only reason that they're going so high is because they're the best of the best, and the shortstop position it's not as deep as one would like, but it's still deep. I mean, for me, I like Addison Russell and Aledmys Diaz that are picks 139 and 151 on average. You know, I can even get behind Dansby Swanson, Marcus Semien, or Asdrubal Cabrera. Asdrubal Cabrera, for me, is going at 276, and I don't see anything wrong with having him as your starting shortstop if he provides you 15, 20 home runs and like a 280 batting average, especially because he does play all the time. But you know Swanson's going to play a lot. Semien does play, even if he got moved over to second base at some point this year, if Franklin Barreto came up. He's still going to provide you a lot of home run power. The average leaves a little bit to be desired, but there's players here. And even, Chuck, you were talking earlier about Elvis Andrews, and if he's able to even duplicate what he did similar to last year, you still get value there.
I really feel like this is almost, to me, it's a relative no-lose situation, because if you fill up your first few rounds with players that you really like and they don't happen to be shortstops, I think you're still going to have a viable plan that is pretty palatable. It's not going to be, I don't think you're going to be completely disgusted with it, which I understand exactly, you know, what Evan is talking about. You know, there's a big drop off. There's a lag, but I think the lag is kind of in accordance, because the first few rounds, I mean, you're taking studs that you really, really like. You know, if you end up with, you know, Edwin Encarnacion, and you end up with the Joey Votto types, you end up with, you know, Arenado, et cetera, and so forth, you're still, you know, filling in your stat sheets around these. And like you said, you're doing it perfectly. You're saying, you know, look at all these different tiers. More than likely, there's somebody that you think is a relatively decent value for where he's getting taken. More than likely. I mean, I understand Eduardo Nunez is the exception or whatever, because he was never really all that good before last year. But there's a lot of other names, like the Addison Russell. You know, if this was 4 or 5 years ago, Addison Russell would be a top 40 pick. And now you can get him outside of the top 100, you know, just because of the power boon and what have you. But Addison Russell is, you know, he hasn't been the player we thought he was going to be, but guess what? He could be a pretty good player.
Yeah, you know? And, I mean, I like Addison because he's still young enough in his batting average. Yeah, that's the only thing that needs to take a major jump, but it's not like him at his young age can't jump 30 points in batting average this year and still have the power potential that he has. And that Cubs team is so loaded that if he did take a step up and move up into, like, a higher spot in the batting order, if there were injuries or anything, he'll get more RBIs and he'll still be able to score runs, and he has the power. So he's a good player that you can look to get. And even Aledmys Diaz, he came out of nowhere last year. People didn't expect him to put up the numbers that he did, and he's now a top 10 option. And I really don't think you can go wrong by taking some of these back and top 10 guys as your starting shortstop, just because they do provide you good all-around value. They just may not provide you the value that, like, Xander or Corey or even Carlos provides you at the top of the first couple rounds.
But is it worth 200, you know, picks in the at the draft table is kind of the, you know, conversation you have to have with yourself. And I think at the end of the day, I think I would rather take the value later and load up at another position.
And I agree with that because, I mean, that's what the entire draft is you trying to grab the best spots of value. And that's why you do mock drafts to try to find where you're going to be able to get some players. You may find that you're not very happy getting Trevor Story, you seem to get him every single time because you miss the first five guys. And so maybe you just take Trevor Story because you feel that you're pressured in taking one of those guys. We'll see what happens if you don't take him, take someone else there, and you take one of the later round guys. See, like, that's the purpose of mocking.
Well, you know, I like the scope of this conversation a lot, but I'm going to kind of add to it a little bit, I hope, with what I say next. And that's that we're talking about it positionally. We're not looking at it categorically. Meaning that, you know, obviously most of us play Roto or what have you, or, you know, category head-to-head. And if you're in those kind of leagues, one thing that can easily happen is what I talked about before. If you have Arenado and Encarnacion as your first two picks, right, you may very well take one of these top-tier shortstops because you want to start chiseling away at speed. You know, and a number of these guys will help you some in speed. You know, Francisco Lindor is going to chip in with 15 or 20 stolen bases. I mean, if you think that's the best speed player available, you know, I personally don't want to chase speed the entire draft and make my first four or five picks be guys that don't run. And so I can see it playing out a number of different ways. But like I said before, I think you can find it. It's going to be palatable either way is how I really feel about it.
I can get behind that as well because it really does depend on what you're looking to draft. If you're looking to draft a specific position, a specific category, then yes, you can look to try to grab those guys. But I think based on pure value for everything in all around aspects, I do think that if you don't get one of those guys, you shouldn't get overworked and beat yourself up because there is value later in the draft. So yeah. I think that's what happens to players. Once they miss out on a run, they start thinking about it and they overthink another pick. They start trying to grab at other players that maybe is a little bit early because of it, and it throws off their entire draft strategy. And that's what we're trying to help people avoid.
Yeah, I agree. And it's weird because the reason that there's a drop after this is the other runs that we're going to talk about. Because what happens is that, okay, if 8, 9, 7, between 7 and 10 shortstops go in the first 3 or 4 rounds, well, overall, then, a lot of those teams are not going to be looking at shortstop for a while. And so these other runs that we're going to talk about start happening, and those are what the draft focuses on. So that's what helps drop a guy like Addison Russell lower than he should be or would have been in years past. That's what drops Aledmys Diaz. By the way, Aledmys Diaz was phenomenal when he played last year. Probably for his fantasy value, if you're an Aledmys Diaz fan like I am, the best thing that happened to him was him getting hurt for a while because that dropped him off the radar. But he didn't do anything wrong when he played last year, before or after the injury. And so I think, you know, you're going to find a situation that you will not, very few people will come out of drafts this year thinking that how they played shortstop is what is going to hurt their team.
I agree. Evan, do you have anything else to add, or should we move on to the next position?
Yeah, no, I think what Chuck said was dead on. As these runs happen, then, you know, teams have that locked. And I think the one, you know, that you can really take a look at is the starting pitching run that happens in the third round, which I kind of hope is where we're going next. And sorry if I, you know, jumped out of line here. But,
yeah, you did jump out of line, Evan. It's okay, though. We'll go right into where you want to go. Don't worry.
I'll just, you know, grab the wheel and steer us all over the place here. But I do think it's interesting because I think as you look at people building their teams, they're going to take, you know, bats in the first two rounds. I really only think four pitchers are probably going to go in the top two rounds of most drafts. Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, and probably Sale or Thor, depending on people's flavor. But then I think you're going to see a huge run where people go, oh, I got to grab that ace, or, you know, it's starting pitching time, and they start diving into that. So once again, you either got to have one that you like or one that you don't like to sit out on. So, Ben, where would you kind of head in this run?
Well, for me, it's tough because I like pitching a lot more than a lot of other people on staff seem to, just because pitchers get hurt all the time. I feel like you just need to load up on pitching. And if you're as good at fantasy as, you know, you'd expect of yourself, you'd be able to find deep round values, or you'd be able to play the waiver wire. So I feel like grabbing some of these pitchers early is a smart idea, but because of how bunched up it is, we were talking before, and it's basically, we would say that between Sale and Syndergaard, and probably where Carrasco is at 15, there's a bunch of players there which roughly go on every 2 to 3 picks on average. And that, to me, seems like a lot, because every pitcher up here, yes, while they're very talented, it's not like they don't have their own concerns in some capacity. And it makes me a little worried that half of them are probably some type of injury concern in a capacity. And as a result of that, if you lost half of them and you drafted two, then you're in a really bad spot. So it's almost like you have to be careful with how early you go for pitcher, because you almost have to go for some of the safer options later. And it makes it a little tough. What are your thoughts, Chuck?
Well, I guess my base plan is going to be in the mock drafts I've done, and in the drafts I've done so far, my base plan is to get one of those top five or six guys, which I consider the top five or six guys to go through Kluber. I want to get one of those top five or six guys, and then I want to fortify it with one more that I trust. You know, I'm a big Justin Verlander guy this year, especially coming off how well he did last year. You know, somebody that I relatively trust who's not hurt, that's just my go-to plan on it. I'm not big, you know, I posted an article on the site, and I'm not big on Carrasco, where his draft position is. I'm a little concerned about, you know, all of the Mets pitchers basically were dinged up last year, so I'm concerned about those guys. I'm not a Matt Harvey guy. I'm trying to limit the risk that I'm taking at starting pitching, which I know is kind of a misnomer, because you can't completely do it no matter what. But I feel like people with better health track records coming off strong seasons, where, you know, they finish strong and strong at the end of the year, those are the kind of things that I'm looking for. So this sort of tier is a tier that I'm sort of skirting around. I'm trying to get in ahead of it, and then I want to come in right behind it.
Phrasing. So real quick, just as I kind of look at it, I think there's two kind of sub tiers here. I think after Kluber, you kind of see this tier of Arrieta, Lester, Darvish, Verlander, which I'm totally okay having those guys as like sub aces. And then you get to this area where after each of these names, just ask yourself, do you believe it? Johnny Cueto, do you believe the strikeouts? David Price, do you believe it? Chris Archer, Steven Strasburg, Carlos Carrasco, Kyle Hendricks, Jacob deGrom. I mean, you just have to ask yourself all these questions right here, and it's not even where they're going numerically in the draft. It's in the ranks. It's basically an area of what the hell do we know about these guys?
Yeah, and we had touched on it, because there is value later on in the draft, and it's not just the value. It's that there's a lot of upside later on in the draft as well. While these guys are studs all in and of itself, they do have the injury concerns. And it's like you were saying, there's always going to be something that makes it a little tougher for you to believe. You know, like for me, it's tough for me to get behind having Cueto, Price, or Archer on my team this year. Even like you were saying before, Strasburg has injuries. Carlos Carrasco has injuries. Kyle Hendricks, you know, is he going to do the exact same thing he did last year? Martinez has had ups and downs. DeGrom, Hamels, who we do seem to like a little bit, but then there's like Tanaka, Greinke, Maeda. You know, it's almost like I'd rather wait a little bit and go for someone who is like a Gerrit Cole or Danny Salazar, who last year were probably in that 12 to 17 range in terms of overall starting pitchers. Cole was probably even a little bit higher than that, but their seasons were derailed by injuries. And yes, there were bad injuries for them, but it's almost like I'd rather go and take someone at pick 130 that has a top 10 to 15 upside that I can grab there rather than invest in someone like a David Price or Chris Archer, who I'm not entirely satisfied with as a pitcher. Do you disagree with that, Chuck?
I don't disagree with it. I guess the only thing that I would add to what you're saying is, for me, I've announced that I'm very risk averse when it comes to pitching. Okay. But I will say this, where I'm going to take my risk, I want huge upside. Huge upside. I don't want, you know, if I'm going to take the gamble, I'm going to take the gamble on somebody who is, could be phenomenal, which is kind of, you were hedging towards that with, in what you said as well. But to me, guys like Syndergaard, guys like Darvish with this phenomenal K rate, you know, that we, that play on good teams. So they, if they put it all together, they can carry your staff for long stretches of time. Some of the other people that are in there, I say to myself, boy, I see a lot of, I don't know, I see a lot of hemming and hawing, and I'm certainly not going to take what I consider to be an injury risk gamble on anybody who is going to come out to be like, oh, if everything falls right, he's going to strike out 8 guys per 9. No, I'm going to take, I'm going to swing for the fences when I take my risks.
So does that mean that you're not looking to grab a guy like an Aaron Sanchez, a Jose Quintana, an Alex Reyes, or a Michael Fulmer? Because they all showed potential, and they were all pretty healthy last year. Alex Reyes, obviously, he's going to be the young guy of the group, and he's got to stick in the rotation in the bigs for the first time, basically. But he has immense upside. So, like, of those players, are you avoiding them when you talk about this type of situation in terms of how you handle your pitchers?
I think that those guys, those are guys that you use to fortify your staff to a large extent. And when the guys are a lot younger, when you're talking about Fulmer, when you're talking about Aaron Sanchez, I still think their performance arc is not completely known yet. You know, think about how early returns on Marcus Stroman meant that we thought he was going to be such and such a player. Well, he's regressed. He's gone the other way in a lot of those categories that we hoped that he was going to be ascending in. So I think you can play off the younger players as not really, we don't really know exactly what they are yet. They're still, the league is adjusting to them and they're adjusting to the league. So I do think Sanchez's strikeout numbers can get higher. I do think that I lean towards Sanchez of those players that you said. I do like the amount of run support that the Toronto pitching staff has gotten, and it's been a better pitching environment than you'd think when you look overall at what Estrada and Happ and a lot of these pitchers have done in Toronto. So that's the one that I lean to of what you said. So, but those are fortifiers, which to me is different than a guy like Darvish, different than a guy like Syndergaard, you know, even different than a guy like, you know, like Matt Harvey can be, because when you're taking those gambles, those are conceivable guys that are top 10 style pitchers. Whereas I think the ceiling for a guy like Sanchez yet at this point probably puts him somewhere in that more closer to 15 to 20 range.
Evan, what do you think about this?
I think that, you know, there's just basically, as you look at it numerically, breaking it into 12s, you're going to find these runs, and you're going to find that it's just, who do you like? Like, Aaron Sanchez is getting so much helium this year. Do you really feel comfortable having him as your number two pitcher? Or is it something where, like, if you decide to forego the, you know, kind of middling ace range, that you go two or three deep in this, you know, 22, kind of like the Kenta Maeda through Gerrit Cole area where you just stock up here? And I think those are, you as the, you're letting the draft come to you, that's the decisions you're going to have to be making. And I think it's, I just love hearing you guys talk about this. So I would rather hear your guys' opinions personally.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, I think Aaron Sanchez to me is a co-number two. Like, if Aaron Sanchez is your number two pitcher, you're going to take another guy that you like really shortly thereafter.
Yeah. And, like,
You'll have your ace. Yep. You'll have your ace and then two co-number twos that you feel good about, you know, trotting out there every, you know, every day they get the ball, you know, et cetera. Whereas if you end up with, you know, if you were to end up with Madison Bumgarner and Darvish, right? Well, then you can feel like, well, you know, I swung for the fences on Darvish, but if he's healthy, look at what that K rate could be, you know, 10, 10 and a half, 11, you know? Mm-hmm. So you can say to yourself, okay, well, if I'm going with a gamble, I'm going. Then those are my top two. Then I'm going to wait, you know, and I'll get a back, you know, I'm fine with a medium number three or a late number three that I think has upside because I'm going to lean on those first two guys. It's all kind of like building a staff. Is to me is how you kind of have to look at it.
I mean, for me, the nice thing about this 20 to 35 range or 20 to 33 range is that there are two players that you can almost kind of rely on to be like super consistent. They don't have to be super flashy, but they're able to be consistent. And that's going to basically be Jose Quintana and Julio Teheran. Now, Teheran didn't have a great year 2 years ago, but as Chuck has pointed out on numerous occasions, Teheran has put up good numbers. He's young. He gets a lot of innings. He still gets strikeouts. And the Braves have been an improving offense ever since Matt Kemp came. Dansby Swanson is up. The organization seems to be going in the correct direction. Freddie Freeman has been coming around and has become a really good all-around player. So that offense will be able to help carry that pitching rotation a little better. Then they bring a couple of veterans in that will be able to actually help Teheran if he does struggle at any capacity because they've been able to get through it. And it's tough when he was the guy who was forced upon to be the veteran as a 24-year-old in that situation. And then you got Jose Quintana who, yeah, he is on the White Sox and it's not going to be a great situation, but he's still going to be a good pitcher and they still have decent players around him. You know, having Melky Cabrera, having Jose Abreu, having Todd Frazier, those are solid veterans that are still able to produce in the lineup. And there's going to be other pieces that will come up as the year goes on that if Jose Quintana is still here that you can rely on. So you could be able to look to match an Aaron Sanchez with one of those two or Garrett Cole or Rich Hill or Danny Salazar who all have injury concerns with one of them. You know, you have the flexibility that you could go in this range and you're able to get two guys out of this area and you're able to be benefited by the fact that you have one guy who's basically like a rock and super consistent and he's going to do everything and you don't have to worry about volatility with him.
Yeah, I completely concur. Like if you're going to take the gambles, right, those are the guys that you want to focus on. The guys that I think are safer that we're talking about in general. I mean, I think Justin Verlander is sort of at the top of the safe list as far as how much he pitches, but all the signs that we saw last year, I mean, Justin Verlander could be a top 10 pitcher this year. He was a top 10 pitcher last year, by the way. It's the idea that, like I said, like, in my first draft that I had this year, Darvish was my number two pitcher. Okay, I love the K rate. Love the idea of the stuff. He's an extra, you know, he gets this extra time back from the injury, et cetera, and so forth. Well, then I did exactly what you said. I made Julio Teheran my third pitcher. You know, somebody who's, I think, barring a drastic change in what we've seen in track record, if something happens, you got to remember it's not a zero-sum game with your risks. Okay, you're going to have, if you take the Steven Strasburg gamble, huge upside. I get that part of it. No doubts about it. Okay, but you take that gamble, more than likely he's not going to miss the whole season, and more than likely he's not going to play the whole season. You know, so if you get 30% of what you thought you were going to get from Steven Strasburg, you know, do you have a safety net that will bolster your staff enough that it's not going to kill your entire fantasy team? And I think that's where this reliability, these reliable guys, you're like, well, you know, there is some upside, but I'm drafting them for stability and durability. I think, you know, all that Kyle Hendricks, Rick Porcello, there's different guys that we can talk about that are there, which is different than the swing for the fence guys, you know, different than the Vincent Velasquez who, you know, struck out, you know, 15 or 20 or whatever it was early in the season last year. And then by the middle of the season, he was unusable. You know, you got to play these games, got to pick and choose and balance how much risk versus how much stability you want in your staff.
Yeah, and I agree. Another player who I see as a consistent player who's probably overlooked and has been is a Tanner Roark, who the 2 years that he's started a lot of games, he's done very well. He has good ERAs. He gets strikeouts. He gets wins, especially on the Nationals. He's a very, very under-the-radar type guy. And, yeah, he's a 35th pitcher off the board in terms of average draft position, but I still feel like he's being underutilized because he's gone as late as 191st in some drafts, which is insane for a guy who does have the consistency that he has shown. One other player who I really like, who Evan and I have talked about, is Steven Matz.
Uh-huh. And
Steven Matz is a player who has phenomenal ERA at home, but he's given up a ton of home runs. But we don't know what's going to happen because he's a super injury-prone type guy. But what are your guys' thoughts on Steven Matz going forward? Because right now he's the 43rd pitcher off the board, 169 ADP. He's gone as late as 216th in drafts and as early as 127. Now, I won't take him at 127, but if he's sitting around pick 180, is he someone that you're looking to get, knowing that he's probably like your fifth or sixth starter off the board at that point, considering what his upside is?
I would.
Evan.
Yeah, I mean, I had actually kind of started the Steven Matz thought train in the staff chat the other day. Real quick, I did just want to address Chuck and Julio Teheran and the consistency comment, because if you look at his batting averages over the last 4 years, so last year it was 222, and then going backwards, 248, 227, 242, kind of been all over the map there, and I'm kind of worried about how the new ballpark is going to play for his home run tendencies, but I think that's might be a story for a different day. As far as Steven Matz, yeah, I had noted that he had like a 2.8 ERA at home last year, and he gave up like 12 of his 16 home runs there, and he was also getting extremely unlucky BABIP wise on the road. So I was curious as far as if there was regression on both sides of the table, you know, would it just, you know, wash out essentially, or would we see fluctuation either way? And I really do think Steven Matz is a interesting buy if you can get in on him before the helium comes when drafts start up.
What about you, Chuck?
For whatever reason, it seems like McCullers from the Astros is this, you know, upside kid with phenomenal stuff that I see in more drafts than not, that there's somebody who just latches onto and wants to be, you know, the earliest person in on him. And really, when you look at it, Steven Matz is a guy who's got as much talent as anybody, and we just haven't been able to see it. You know, for me, he's got to fit in as I feel really safe about where my staff is, and then I'm okay, you know, using him to bolster the conceivable upside that I have within the staff, because nobody's doubting his stuff, but you look at his innings totals over the years and he's not close to ready to jump up and be one of those, you know, durable, you know, 180 to 210 innings pitch kind of guys. He hasn't shown us that. And I think the Mets have been struck with enough injuries in recent seasons that I don't think they're going to put the governor on him pretty hard, in my opinion.
Yeah, I as a Mets fan, I can see them doing that. So I just hope that he's able to get through a year healthy, and then I'm just excited to see what he's able to do if he is, in fact, healthy, because I think he's got a lot of talent. Guys, why don't we move into the last position that we're going to talk about today, and that's going to be outfield. There's two different spots of runs that we were talking about, and that's basically from number 6, which is George Springer, to the number 20 spot, which is Kyle Schwarber. That is on average pick 33.66 to 74.73. So in that 40-42 pick range, there's about 14 outfielders off the list. So what are your thoughts on this tier exactly? And because we do know that you're going to need a ton of outfield help just based on how these teams are, you start three at a minimum all the time. How many players do you need in this range before you start getting worried that players are jumping off the board? Like, is one satisfied, or does one satisfy your team needs, do you think, or no? Chuck?
I strongly prefer to have two. If I don't have two by the end of this run, I want to feel like I'm really locked and loaded around the infield, which can happen. It's not that you can't make a team like that. But outfield depth, I feel like, is very important in almost every format. And so you have to, you know, and this is where the fun of the game comes in. You have to use your own personal judgment and say, well, this is the gamble that I like. Because outfield's really deep this year, but it's not real reliable. You know, I mean, you're going to see names that you've seen for years going later than you think they should. There's like either there's aging concerns, like with Nelson Cruz. There's Justin Upton. You know, what Upton do you get? He can carry your team for a month and stink for 2 months. You know, and it seems like that's the way that the outfield is flowing now. You know, there's, you know, is Carlos Gonzalez finally over all his issues? Is he going to get traded? Is he, you know, so you're going to have to, this is going to be the hardest part and the most fun to navigate in a draft, to me, is trying to figure out how you want to use these spots in your outfield. You know, Chris Davis of the A's, you know, is his batting average from last year? I mean, he could hit what, 215? He could hit 255 or 260. I mean, you're going to have to plot and strategize how you want to mix and match all these different variables while getting enough power and getting enough speed out of your outfield. So to me, like 90 times out of 100, I'm going to take two outfielders in this category that you're speaking of.
Evan, your thoughts? Evan.
Oh, sorry, I had my microphone on mute. But I was gushing over Nelson Cruz, so it's probably good that you didn't hear all the nasty, dirty things that I was saying about him. Even if he's old, to get Nelson Cruz in like the third round would be so money. And then I would love to play around and get like Ian Desmond is a name who I think people are either going to be really in on, and you're going to have somebody who like jump. I don't think anybody's going to take him 20th overall, and kudos to whoever did that in NFBC. But I think he's a name that I would be in on in this area. And like Gregory Polanco, I think somebody's going to go nuts on a Billy Hamilton. I think two is the number of guys that I want out of this pool here.
Yeah, for me, I just, it's tough basically because it really depends on where you fall in that first round. Because if you fall early enough in the first round, you may be able to get either Trout or Betts. You know, if you fall at the back half, you may want to go Harper. Depending on where you are in the first round, you may go for an infielder, and then you may go Blackman or Starling Marte in the second. So you may end up having an outfielder already before you even get to this tier. It's not totally inconceivable. I feel that you need at least one. You definitely need one from this tier if you don't have one in the first top five outfielders. But depending on who you have, like for me, I wouldn't go for a Christian Yelich or a Billy Hamilton in this range just because I don't feel that they're going to be able to provide me enough all-around value, more so for Billy Hamilton just because of the power and the RBIs and anything. Yes, I do know that you lock steals up, but I feel that you could go for someone that's a little bit later and still get some stolen bases that you don't necessarily need Billy Hamilton. You just need to win by one stolen base. You don't need to win by 50. So for me, it makes it a little easier based on that because I know that I can play the board properly because there is a three-round range in this area that – if there's someone who I like in the second round or the second tier of this, I can wait a little bit and try to grab one of them. The other tier that we were going to try to talk about was basically the 24 to 35 area, and that's going to be talking about Chris Davis with a K all the way down to Yosmani Tomas. And that's basically a 43 pick difference for those 12 players. In this area, who are you guys looking to get? Because for me, the people who jump off the list are Chris Davis, Jose Bautista, Adam Jones, and most likely Stephen Piscotty. So, Evan, what are your thoughts on this second tier?
I don't know if I'm missing something, but I don't think David Dahl should be above any of the, like, I don't get it. I'm sorry if that makes me stupid, but I really love Jose Bautista at the price this year. I'm an Adam Jones apologist, if you've heard me talk, and I kind of do like Adam Eaton, but I think it's going to be one of these guys that there's going to be somebody in your draft who's going to hop up and grab a Benintendi or you know, somebody who's going to be buying back in on Lorenzo Cain, or think Odubel Herrera in an OBP league is going to be an absolute savior. And I think this is an area where I could see grabbing a couple of guys. And if you had, you know, a five outfielder league and you took one from the earlier tier that we were talking about and kind of doubled down here, I might even be okay with that, or grab two from each tier if you missed out on that kind of first top 10 outfielder. I think there's a lot of names here to kind of mess around with and build a good team if you stack up elsewhere.
Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think I'm going to look at this more as an overall strategy issue, where I think to myself, I want to see why some players and why I think they're getting wrongfully dinged, why they're, you know, why I think they can be extremely good value for where they're getting taken. One of the outfielders that I'm noting is that if you really look at how well JD Martinez played last year, when he played, he was really good. But you get that injury window and that knocks down his numbers. And when you're sitting down, you just look at his numbers from last year, you don't realize that he was actually pretty good. And he's in the middle of a really good lineup, you know, in a division that's got rebuilding teams in it that is not going to be overly strong in pitching for the most part. So to me, like, that's how you want to play off of it. You want to say to yourself, okay, well, this is where I see these guys going. And to me, there's big upside. This person is going lower than I think they should go. I think that's how you have to look at it. You know, and it's funny that he mentioned David Dahl, because again, the article that I wrote about the five most ridiculous ADPs early in this drafting season, David Dahl was right up there. When he's going as a top 90 player and he's the fourth or fifth left-handed outfielder on a team, and you know, he's got a very small sample size to begin with. You know, I see upside, but I see a lot of danger in picks like that. So I think you really want to take a look at the draft value per se and just build your team as strong as you possibly can. And you're gonna have to dip a toe on some of these guys, but I think you wanna figure out if you're buying high or you're buying low. To me, buying Chris Davis with a K right now is buying high. You know, is he better? Is he ever gonna have a better year than he had last year? You know, by most people's thoughts, like I saw him play a lot in Milwaukee, by most people's thoughts, I do not see him having a better year than he had last year under any circumstances. And so to me, that's telling you that you're buying him at high tide right now. You know, so take a look and see what happens. You know, guys like Trumbo, you see guys like Trumbo fall, you see, you know, a lot of these different players, because it turns into being a pick your flavor kind of thing. You know, there's all these guys, and a bunch of them have, you know, top 25 to top, say, 17 or 18 outfielder upside, and you have to decide which one you like the variables around the most. And that's the fun of the draft. That's what it is.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's players that I like in this area that I feel like I could take, as I have mentioned when we started talking about this tier. And then there's players that are behind this tier that I still do like, that I know that are decent options. You know, there's a Cole Calhoun, Ender Inciarte, Hunter Pence. For me, Michael Bradley could be a decent player. Yasiel Puig or a Randall Grichuk, they have their flaws, but they could still be good players. You know, there's enough outfielders that are deeper down this list that you could be happy with grabbing someone a little bit later if you miss. But you got to get at least a couple, like Evan said, maybe 3 to 4 out of this entire area.
Well, since you guys are looking it up, I'm just curious, what about Lorenzo Cain? What about his ADP?
Lorenzo Cain's ADP is 127.59. He's the 29th outfielder off the board right now.
Well, like I said, sometimes at the draft table, you have to take a second and figure out who you think has rightfully or who has wrongfully fallen. You know, if Lorenzo Cain falls from, you know, that falls further down, you know, I'm sure it's within his range that he's gone in the 150s and what have you at various times. You say to yourself, well, I need somebody who could give me a little production all over the board. You know, he's a way that you could maybe sort of skirt the system and get some extra value as well to me.
But at that point, you would just go with your boy Carlos Gomez, right?
Not quite that early always. Yeah. But I do really like if Carlos Gomez, you know, and I'm sorry that I will try and talk about this as infrequently as I can, because I'm sure I could bang the drum regularly. He is a very unique individual, and he dismisses that he ever played in Houston, you know, or that he ever played in Texas, right? Because he moved to Houston at the end of the season. And the point being is that since he dismisses it in his head, like if something gets up, he's just a very weird mental player. And he completely rebounded at the end of last season. You know, I think health is the big issue. But if you want late steals with the upside, remember, this is a guy who was a number one draft pick for two to three years straight. He was a first round pick in fantasy. And he's not that old. He's only 30 years old. So, you know, if you want to see somebody who's got 25-25 upside, it's a rare opportunity to buy a guy at this level in the draft.
All right. Evan, is there anything else you want to add before we finish up with this outfield here?
No, I mean, I think we pretty much hit everything, and you're going to hear the guys that, you know, we like or don't like, high on, not high on. So there's plenty of time between now and draft season, so we'll have plenty of time to cover this.
Exactly. Chuck, any closing points?
You know, not really. I mean, I just want to thank you guys for joining the discussion here today, because I think this is an interesting way to look at it, instead of just, you know, what do we think about this guy? What do we think about this guy? Well, how do they fit in the draft? And how's the, you know, how does this sort of meld itself into the fabric of what your teams are going to be once you have them drafted? So I really, I like this approach where we are dropping names, but we are talking about different strategies that you can employ instead of, you know, just, you know, looking at guys' numbers and talking about them individually, where you can get them, who's available, where they're at, and how you want to approach your overall team construction, I think is a very productive way to look at it.
I agree. Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Well, like I said, you can always reach me at Just Chucking It. I am doing some work for Banished to the Pen. I've been posting some articles. I have a new Just Chucking It out there, which is where my Twitter handle comes from, Just Chucking It. I have a new one of those that I'm going to post on the website this week. So I'm doing that, and I'm trying to do some follow-up articles on some trends that I'm going to see going forward in the ADPs, the movers over time, which I think will be very interesting. And, you know, this week we can all react to what's going to happen with the WBC rosters and see how we feel about that as well.
Evan, where can the listeners reach you, and what are you working on?
At EasyEv3 on Twitter. No longer harassing Mike Werner about Vince Velasquez. Let's start harassing the dude that took Trey Turner number one in the NFBC draft. And I'll jump on that movement and get that ball rolling.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. I will be doing some baseball articles throughout the year. And I am currently the host of our Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. Eric Mackey joins me on that. We get a weekly show out there, so give that one a listen. And from all of us here at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season.